20 of the worst things that recruiters do. At the Brooks Group, we often find ourselves looking at things in terms of what people shouldn't do. In other words, the actions that will derail them. And sometimes we feel like we're being a little bit cynical or negative. But the truth is, if you know what not to do, it's just as powerful as knowing what to do, okay? So, what we've assembled is a list of 20 of the worst things that we've seen salespeople, and that includes recruiters, do in all our years in the business. Things that are absolutely guaranteed to totally and completely derail their careers. Let's take a look and we'll discuss each one in some detail. Okay, here we go. Number one, they don't become a student of their craft. In other words, what happens is they start out with a lot of enthusiasm. They get into it for 3, 4, 5 years, but then they go to sleep at the switch and they never do things to improve either their professional knowledge or their selling skills. They find ways to avoid attending training meetings. They don't read books or listen to audios or view videos on sales-related topics. You know, they don't constantly reinvigorate themselves. The best recruiters are always open to learning new things. They look forward to their training meetings, and sometimes they even teach the lesson. Experts often say, if you really want to learn something, teach it. Top recruiters also study every one of their target markets to see how they are evolving, and they learn everything they can about what the Air National Guard can offer new unit members. And they do it every month of every year during their careers. Look at it this way. If you pick up one idea that you didn't think about before, or something new that you can integrate into what you're already doing, it's well worth the time and energy. It's amazing to see recruiters who don't invest in their own professional growth. We're in a profession that's changing by leaps and bounds, and we're into the 21st century. If you're still selling the Air National Guard the way you sold just a few years ago, you're in trouble. Therefore, if you take your profession very seriously, you'd better study and master your craft. The second mistake recruiters make is they don't find their niche market. Now, what do we mean by that? Well, it sounds like a real fancy way of saying something simple, but what it amounts to is this. They don't become specialists at one or two of their target segments. For example, the Air National Guard recruits non-prior service applicants, prior service Air Force applicants, and prior service applicants from other branches. Those categories can be further broken down into officer, enlisted, line, medical corps, etc. Some recruiters make the mistake of trying to work every one of these markets the same way at the same time. In truth, the most successful recruiters really master the art of finding their niche, the target segments to recruit into where they are most comfortable and most successful. For example, they become well-known specialists in selling the non-prior enlisted program, or for working prior service Air Force leads. It's much easier and more effective to become an expert in a couple of niche markets rather than to try and learn a great deal about every market the Air National Guard recruits from. Third, they fail to position themselves correctly. Wow, we sure talk about this one a lot at the Brooks Group. You know, the way people position themselves really determines how they're seen by their leads and applicants. And people pay attention to people who they perceive as having something important to say to them. Consequently, you need to position yourself as an expert on the Air National Guard and what it has to offer. This can be accomplished through presentations at schools, association meetings and commander's calls, or articles written for the base, local or school newspapers. Face it, most people, when they hear the word recruiter, don't have a positive impression. Therefore, the best way to recruit is not to position yourself as a recruiter, but to position yourself as an expert. Number four, they fail to prospect. How many times have we said the biggest cause of failure for recruiters is that they have an inadequate supply of qualified leads? And the nice thing about it is, nowadays, because of digital technology, and don't jump back and say, oh shoot, they're talking about that again. No. Digital technology really is at the point where you can make it seamless, simple, and easy to deploy an effective prospecting strategy into the marketplace. Number five, they get in front of the wrong people. There's an old statement that goes like this. You can't make goals selling the Air National Guard opportunity to unqualified leads. You had better be in front of leads who have the authority to make a decision and qualify for the Air National Guard opportunity, have a need or perceived problem, have a relative sense of urgency about joining. They are willing to listen to you, and they trust you. All the characteristics we talk about. You know, if you confuse activity with results and you're worried most about reports and numbers you give to your supervisor, you can go back and say, well, I was in front of this number of people. Well, the question is, are they the right people? You know, your own self-image, your sense of self-worth, and how well you've positioned yourself, they're all going to affect whether you're in front of the right people. Number 6, they listen to the wrong peers. Now, what do you think we mean by that? They talk to other recruiters who are struggling. They get negative input. They hear comments like, that stuff doesn't work in this territory. Don't listen to those other guys. You don't need to follow the impact selling process. The people in this state can't pass the tests. We can't match what the other services offer. There are no vacancies in the good career fields. The bonuses aren't high enough. I'm overgoaled. My boss is a jerk. It goes on and on and on. Okay, don't listen to them. Listen to positive, upbeat stuff that really does make you feel good, whether it's a successful peer, music you enjoy, motivational content, or something else that's upbeat. Number 7, they don't focus on the value of the Air National Guard opportunity. Now, that sounds pretty strange, doesn't it? Well, here's what we mean. Too many recruiters worry about what the applicant is going to think about the commitment. In other words, the time, freedoms, and other tangible and intangible things it costs to join the Air National Guard. Instead, their focus should be on the value they are providing someone who joins the Air National Guard. Recruiters should start thinking of the Air National Guard opportunity the way a person thinks about a savings plan investment. A person pays something up front to receive a lot more in return. Number 8. They misuse or abuse government resources. It's tempting to borrow the government car while yours is in the repair shop. Or maybe you think it's not hurting anyone if you use your government phone to make personal long-distance calls. And of course, there's the government travel credit card. You may be thinking, what's the harm if I use it to buy that new big-screen TV and then pay it off when the bill comes in? Simple. It's not legal. If you worked at a department store, would you borrow money from the cash register? Probably not. Using the government travel card for unofficial or personal purchases has become one of the leading reasons recruiters are relieved of duty. Don't make the same mistake, because it's more than a mistake. It's a crime. Number 9. They fail to ask the right questions. In fact, not only would we say they fail to ask the right questions, but maybe they fail to ask any questions at all. Or worse, they did ask questions, but didn't listen to the answers. Take an honest look at how you interact with your applicants. Are you asking the right questions? Do you listen to the answers? Do you write them down? Do you ask questions in the right way? Do you ask them in the right sequence? Can you build from one question to the next? Are you anticipating what you're going to say next instead of listening to what they're saying now? Or worse, are you thinking about what you're going to say next? We've beaten this one to death over the last few years, but it's totally consistent. Recruiters fail to ask the right questions. What does that tell you about a recruiter whose whole selling strategy is simply benefits dumping? They're not paying attention to the applicant. We cannot emphasize that enough. Number 10, they are either digitally compulsive or digitally impaired. Okay, in other words, they are so compulsive about this digital technology that they spend all of their time on the internet or in software programs or in email and all this kind of stuff. Or they're so technologically challenged that they're absolutely frozen about using it. Most of us think you get one group over here that's just totally involved and immersed in activity when it comes to digital technology. And then you have another group over here that's totally afraid of it and runs screaming the other way. But as simple as it sounds, the truth is, the most successful person is going to be the one who falls in the middle. Bottom line, you should not be sitting in front of your computer screen all day long. You need to be eyeball to eyeball with your leads, applicants, and influencers. Computer technology is a tool. When somebody is building a house, they don't use a hammer for everything. They use a hammer for specific things that they have to do. This is your hammer. When you have a tool like AFRIS, it's a hammer. Pull it out, use it when you need it, and then put it back in your belt when you're done with it. Go on and do what you do. Don't live in front of this thing. But also, don't go out and try to build a house without a hammer in your tool belt. Use it when it's appropriate. Number 11, they fail to manage their time well. The most important asset recruiters have is time, and how you use it will determine a lot of your success. You better figure out if you're going to be digitally involved or digitally impaired, or whether you're going to be talking to the right people or the wrong people, or maximizing your time when you're in front of somebody. I'm sure you already know this. There's a direct correlation between how many calls you make and how many you receive. Furthermore, how much time do you spend making the calls, and how do you handle them when they call back? Everything fits in the context of time. You get somebody who is an absolute disaster, no matter what their job is. Their major problem is that they don't manage their time well. This is particularly true, though, in recruiting. Number 12. They're either too timid or too aggressive. This goes back to the self-image issue and self-awareness, knowing when to push and when to back off, okay? So the truth of the matter is, sometimes you've got to be more aggressive. Sometimes you've got to be less aggressive. But you take someone who fails at recruiting, you assume they're always timid. But then you find someone else who fails, they're always aggressive. Isn't it one of the myths that are out there? You know, oh, he'll be a great recruiter because he's very aggressive and very assertive. Well, if that behavior is misapplied, then no. Because what happens is, someone too aggressive tries to slay the dragon, but instead, the dragon slays them. They don't gain enough accessions because they're just too aggressive or too assertive for the marketplace. Now, the good news is that it is far easier to back off being assertive than it is for someone who's timid to suddenly become assertive. But that becomes, as we've said, that self-awareness, self-discovery issue. Now, here's an interesting one. Number 13, they fail to match the Air National Guard's offering to what the applicant is really looking for. In other words, they don't apply the right solution. They've got a canned presentation, okay? For example, they pitch money for college, high-tech training, and extra income. I know I can sell these three things, so I'm always going to hit them with these features, regardless of what the applicant says is important. Well, the fact is, there's a common scenario building here. A situation where somebody goes in, they ask a couple of questions, or maybe not, and they get some answers, but they don't really listen, because all they're waiting to do is apply the three things that they believe most applicants want. This, this, and this. And you know, for them, that's how they believe they've become successful. But the fact is, that style just won't work in application-based selling. That's the direction you've got to go in. Perhaps the best way to put it is to say that one of the reasons they fail is they don't understand application-based selling. In other words, they don't apply the right solution for that specific person. When that happens, they're in trouble. Number 14, they can't deal with change, or they change too much. In other words, what happens is, they can't deal with the new ways things are happening in the Air National Guard, or they don't know how to react to it, so they're constantly changing, and they have no success track to run on. So they're constantly misfiring, okay? They're up and down, they're hyper. That's why maintaining balance is so critical. How do you balance change? How do you balance application? How do you balance the right questions? How do you balance your time? What we've discovered is that when someone understands this balance and they get into the groove, it's kind of like an athletic team when they get the momentum, they keep it moving. Momentum for recruiters is balance. And perhaps that's as old as history, because history has always talked about balance, hasn't it? Number 15, they place themselves into a situation in their personal life that fails to deliver an adequate support system. If you have something going on in your personal life that does not lend itself to giving you total and complete support in your professional life, what often happens is you either do tension-relieving activities on the job so that you don't think about the bad issues, or you try to escape the bad issues. And if you're not really squared away, you tend to let those other issues influence you on the job. And then what happens? You don't perform to the optimum. All three of those scenarios are bad. The fact is, you have a sphere of influence in your life, and it can be positive or it can be negative. And if it's negative, it must be addressed, whether it's the people that you hang out with or it's the relationship with your family and other important people in your life. You're not ever going to make it alone. No one in this world ever makes it alone. You need a support system. But your support system has to be exactly what we say it is, a support system. You have to be able to truly rely on others to make it through difficult situations. So be very careful who you pick to play the key roles in your life. Number 16, they fail to pre-call plan and organize for their calls. In other words, what happens is they just aren't organized. Top recruiters invest time preparing for important presentations they'll give to their leads, applicants, influencers, or staff agencies in their organization. They know they may only get one good shot at a particular applicant or one shot to win someone's support and cooperation, so they take those opportunities very seriously. What we found out about recruiters is that if they come in and if they're not well organized and if they're not planning, they're in real trouble. So what do you need to do? What does planning mean? It means understanding your competition, positioning yourself correctly, wearing the right uniform, having the right material, having the right sales aids, the right sales tools, understanding the formal and the informal structure of the organization, following the impact sales process, and pre-preparing your questions. All of this has to be done ahead of time. Even the best recruiters, the ones who have been successful for 5 or 10 years, still invest a huge amount of time preparing for their appointments and presentations. Unfortunately, with recruiters, far too many think that they can wing their way through anything. Here's number 17. They never learn how to ask the right questions. Now, that's as obvious as it seems. It's also so fundamentally basic. When you've got a big presentation or an opportunity to be in front of somebody, when you're getting into that probe step, you've got to actually sit down and design and craft your questions ahead of time. That's very valuable time spent. Let's take a look at 18. They don't understand that providing service is part of recruiting. A recruiter once told one of our trainers, "When I was an active duty recruiter, my job was to send people to basic training. Rarely did I see my applicants after they joined. In fact, some recruiters used to say, 'Kiss 'em and ship 'em.' In the Guard, it's different. My applicants come back home after basic training, and often they give me feedback about their enlistment and training experiences. There's more to it than that. Not only are your accessions going to let you know how they did, they're going to tell their friends, neighbors, and relatives about you too. Regrettably, some recruiters think it's only up to the gaining unit to welcome and look out for the new unit member. They figure they can only recruit that member once. After that, it's up to their home unit or retention office to answer the member's questions and keep them happy. On the other hand, smart recruiters follow the progress of the people they recruit. For example, they check in with the person's family while the new member is away at basic training or tech school. And when that new guardsman finishes their basic training and tech school, they welcome them back home and visit them during their first drill weekend, perhaps even joining them for lunch. Why? Because you want to build that reputation as a recruiter who promises a lot and delivers more. Providing service after the applicant has become a unit member is still part of the sale, a future sale when you use that satisfied unit member as a referral source. Number 19, they fail to provide value-added solutions. In other words, what they do is provide just one solution, just one benefit for joining the Air National Guard. This happens because they don't probe deep enough to uncover multiple stars. Instead, they jump after the first need identified by the applicant and unload every bit of information they can about that one feature. For example, when an 18-year-old non-prior service applicant says they plan to go to college, the recruiter too often focuses on educational assistance only, instead of also finding out if the applicant has interests in traveling, job satisfaction, camaraderie, etc. On the other hand, successful recruiters exhaust the probe step. They dig deep and look for multiple reasons why the Air National Guard opportunity offers compelling value. Remember, always try to uncover at least 3 stars. Shoot for 5, never settle for just 1. And if you can offer your applicant 7 reasons for joining the Air National Guard, they're toast. And number 20, they fail to ask for the commitment. You see, in the final analysis, if you fail to ask someone to join the Air National Guard, what good are you doing as a recruiter? What have you accomplished? You have to get very good at this. You've got to be confident enough to say to someone, "When would you like to take your test and physical? When are you interested in attending basic training? When would you like to enlist?" We teach recruiters to use the assumptive close. If you are working with a qualified applicant who trusts you, if you've asked the right questions, made the correct recommendations, and offered third-party evidence to support your recommendations, you have every right to believe the applicant will follow your lead when you say something like, "Okay, let's get the enlistment paperwork started." You see? Now, this has been a long audio, and we're not going to try to summarize it, but we are going to urge you to go back through this segment and listen to it over and over again. These are the 20 most common reasons why we've seen recruiters fail. So, what does that mean? It's pretty simple. Don't do these things, and you're well on your way to becoming or remaining successful.